What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Hello, happy Monday.
Here we are.
Ooh, it is a very dreary, rainy day here. Is it rainy where you are?
It's been raining for like 2 days. I love it. It's my favorite weather in the world.
Yeah, it's very melancholy. It feels very timely. As we're recording this, daylight savings happened yesterday, which is my least favorite day of the year. So it feels like a really good time to have a moody episode. And that's what we're having today.
So unusual for us.
Shocking. We're going to talk about holidays and how sometimes we dread them and how we're dealing with that.
And reimagining them, right?
It feels rather hopeful to me, but also woven in just a lot of melancholy and woe, as the season dictates. So for me, I know we were talking before we started recording that we have pretty distinctly different experiences. That's like similar and different. But for me, holidays are this like minefield of memories, and they're not all good. So it feels like this really weird, painful mix of like cheerful nostalgia and then like this heart-wrenching sorrow. And having a kid has just complicated that. It's just layered. There's a whole other layer on top of that. And I really want to gift him traditions from my childhood. He's at this age where he wants to know like if we did things when we were little kids and what we did. And he wants to do the same thing.
Oh my gosh, I love your kid.
Andrew's mom told him that she used to jump in piles of leaves when she was a kid. And now he's like obsessed with it. And every time he sees leaves, he's like, you know, when TG was a kid, she jumped in leaves. So it feels really important that I am able to share with him the things that felt special to me as a kid. And it's a really, really hard time of year. And I have, over the past 4 years of having a kid, in varying degrees, felt a lot of guilt for how sad and depressed I can get in the holiday season. So where I am currently with this is making a lot of space for my sadness, releasing the guilt around it, because that just makes everything more complicated. And then just like grasping onto joy wherever I can. And so in this episode, I have some like, I don't know, it feels a little like tricky, which is maybe not our like normal vibe, but some things that I am doing that have helped, some things that I have found that help get me through the holiday season. I want to know what your relationship is to holidays, because I know that we have some different origins here.
They are different origins, but I think it's funny that like guilt and sadness are the feelings that come up a lot. I wonder what that's about. I grew up in a really big family with big extended family too. And so my memories around holidays are big and busy and lots of voices and lots of people. And not only big, but like tied to church. Like a lot of our rituals around holidays were very much like connected to religious stories. And you weren't just connected to your family, but you were like connected to this larger community and this larger narrative that made the holidays, I think, as a kid, feel like you were a part of something much bigger than yourself or even your little family. And it's not that like our holidays or my memories are like all perfectly rosy, but I do have a lot of nostalgia. I think a lot of closeness with my siblings, some of my siblings around that time, my sister Sarah, we went on a lot of road trips. So I think part of the pain of holidays now is being in a family that doesn't match my family of origin in a lot of different ways. And so our holidays are not matching. You know, our holidays don't match that. We're tiny. We're three of us. We also are not a part of any sort of church. And so we don't have that same sort of like loop into this larger community celebration. And we don't have the same containers around holidays. And so I find myself feeling a little bit lost, wanting so much to offer my kid like something rooted and like full of wonder and awe, and like struggling to know how to give him that, and feeling a lot of guilt for not being able to offer him. I know in my head that there's lots of ways to create beauty and ritual. It's not like I literally think we can't do it. I just struggle to know how. And it's also a lot of effort to like recreate something. And
pressure. It's like, oh, I am creating the memory that he will have. And that's like, oh, dear God. I've been, this is kind of separate from this episode, but I've been freezing at his birthdays every year for the past, so we've done 4 birthdays, and every single one I have like dropped the ball, frozen. Well, last year I think I did kind of good, but this year was...
Well, good thing those were the first ones that he will never remember, by the way.
Yeah, I hope so. Because I think we need to have a whole episode on birthdays. We're not even going to dig into that right now. Culturally, the holidays are such a big thing. It's everywhere you go. It's so much pressure.
Yeah, and I think it's this feeling like, I need to make this feel like magic to you. This needs to feel so, so, so special. And I don't know how to do that. But I do feel like being near you, and I definitely have approached this differently by watching you do it and talk about it and process it openly. We've become a lot more intentional, and there's been a lot more creativity and play and a little bit more openness around it. And that feels hopeful, even as there's maybe like a little bit of pain with it that remains. But what are some of, maybe start talking to us about some of those tips and tricks, or the, you know, the ways that you've thought about it that have been so helpful in reframing it, reapproaching it.
Yeah. The thing that I'm working on most right now is building new traditions, which I've always kind of held this in the back of my mind, but I haven't put tons of effort into it, but distinctly and intentionally doing something that I've not done before so that I don't have any other association connected to it. 2 things that I am actively planning this year is to celebrate St. Nicholas Day.
How did you pick that one?
My little sister is Catholic and like very, like a very joyful.
A joyful Catholic.
A joyful Catholic. I know, it's shocking. I think it's like more connected to Catholicism. I don't know. But the part that feels sweet is that you like leave shoes out and put like candy in it. I honestly don't know that much. I'm going to research it. But I do know there's something with shoes and candy. And I was like, great. On December 9th, where everyone's getting a new pair of slippers for the winter, and I'm going to fill them with chocolates.
You said St. Nicholas Day. I thought you said St. Patrick's Day. I was thinking green. Okay, sorry.
Oh, funny. No, and it is like the origin of Santa Claus, which I kind of love being able to share that origin story with Charlie. So that's going to be new this year. And I asked my sister, actually this morning while I was like finalizing my notes, I sent her a message and I was like, will you please like teach me how to celebrate St. Nicholas Day, and can we do it together? Because we live across the street from each other. So the babies can like compare their little shoe things. So that feels special. And it feels, this is kind of like jumping down on my list, but no one but me knows that, is front loading the season with things, so that I think there's a lot of pressure and it all culminates at the end. And then there's this like deep letdown afterwards. And so I really want to focus on like activities and rituals and things that we're doing throughout all of December. And I feel like I'm kind of just heavily pushing on Christmas, but early in December, having something that feels really special.
Yeah, I like that. We have done that a little bit in our family, in that we like really amp up and like invest in holidays that were not a big deal when I was little. Like, we didn't celebrate Halloween at all when I was a kid. And so Halloween is like our biggest thing of the year in our family, mostly because we're following our son's lead. He's been obsessed with Halloween since he was about 2. So we're like gathering our Halloween decoration collection, and we make our own Halloween decorations, and Otto starts planning our costumes. Like, he started planning next year's already. So we have about a year to plan for that. And then we really spend a lot of time thinking about New Year's Day, which was a nothing when I was growing up. But we have built some rituals and practices around that day that feel good to our family and that are small. And but I like the idea of de-emphasizing a single day, because it's really interesting this year on Halloween. we were literally putting on our costumes. We were Lock, Shock, and Barrel from Nightmare Before Christmas this year. We were putting on our costumes in my childhood bedroom. So we go trick-or-treating in my parents' neighborhood. They have really good candy. And Otto started saying something like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was some sort of like bittersweet, is it not going to be Halloween again for another year? And Michael was like, you're just like your mom, like the preemptive nostalgia, like you're having it right now, kid. And so I was thinking, like, so much pressure on one day is really hard. Like, how can you even soak in all of the joy, the fire hose of joy of this one day? I like the idea of breaking that up and making other little days leading up to, or like having rituals beyond just the single day feels good to me too.
Yeah. The other text I sent this morning, I have a little group chat and I was like, we're celebrating winter solstice this year, which is on the 21st, which feels so close to Christmas, but is like far enough away that like people will probably still be free. And I'm not sure exactly what I want to do, but it kind of feels like, to me, it feels like the beginning part of thinking about New Year's Eve. And New Year's Eve is like that is my sacred holiday.
Really?
Oh, yes. We need to have a whole episode about New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. We can talk about it here too, but
I want to know what you do. And I'll tell you what we do on New Year's Day. What do you do on New Year's Eve? What's the whole thing?
Well, New Year's Eve is just a self-indulgent, reflective, joyful, sad, grief-ridden, delighted, all the emotions smorgasbord. And I pull tarot and I draw and I write and I go through my sketchbooks from the last year and I think about the next year. It's like every little piece of indulgent, self-reflective. I'm saying self-indulgent in like kind of a silly way. I feel very positively about this, where I just like am deeply, deeply reflective. And my birthday is in November and I'm always get like very moody and self-reflective around my birthday. So like my birthday to New Year's Eve, like mid-November to the end of December, it's dark, it's cold. I feel this like internal, like warm angst. So yeah, New Year's Eve always looks, I always host a Patreon call New Year's Eve morning, on the morning of New Year's Eve. And we like do reflections all together. So I'll be doing that this year. And then I just spend the whole day in my feelings.
So it's not a family day. It's like very personal, inward reflective.
It's different every year, but the thing that is the same is it's my day and I'm in my fifis all day long. And then New Year's Day is like sleeping in, and I don't know, New Year's Day is kind of just like empty for whatever we want it to be, more reflecting.
That's what I remember New Year's Day as being, kind of an empty day. Like it's like the flurry of all the holidays are done and now we're just in January and it's going to be cold forever. So buckle in. A couple of years ago, we started making like a giant, giant pot of orange marmalade. We start it on New Year's Eve. It has to like boil. You leave the oven on very, very low all night, I think. You start it the night before and it has to like sit for 12 hours. And then you start the like boiling the next morning. So we like start it the night before and then we have this marmalade bubbling over on the stove. And we switch out all of our Christmas decorations for like citrus bright colors. And then we buy a bunch of glass jars and we put all the marmalade in these glass jars. And then I make little tags for all of our friends and auto decorates them. And then we go around and deliver them to our people around town. And it feels like a way, I don't know, the citrusness of it feels like we're kind of like scrubbing something, you know, like we're moving into something bright and fresh. And then I think the like, being mindful and remembering the people that we love who are around us. And I really like being able to do that with Otto, like for him to be able to give and like run up to the houses and deliver these things feels good. So we've done that a couple of years now and it's just a small thing, but it feels really good. Yeah.
I think the smaller that you can make the ritual, but like pouring meaning into it, the better. I'm not here for like big elaborate things.
Well, they're kind of unsustainable, right? Like, how do you keep that up? At least in my house. But I also like the way that you've talked about like discovering rituals or traditions.
Yeah, like paying attention to what is just naturally unfolding. I think just by nature of having a kid everything shifts and is new. And so you have to start paying attention. I love the way that Halloween became this like really big thing for you, because that was what Otto is about. Charlie is like really getting into Halloween in a slightly different way than Otto, but I think we're going to be Halloween people too. But yeah, a couple years ago, we randomly drove through this park. It's called Lone Elk Park. And there's a bunch of elk and bison. And you can just like, you drive really slowly through this park and you can look at all of the animals.
I'm not sure I've ever even seen a bison in real life. Have I ever seen a bison?
I doubt it. They're so huge. There's so much poop. It's so stinky. They're just magnificent.
Just hanging out in a park?
Yeah, it's this huge like nature reserve.
Dude, Missouri.
Yeah, so we did it 2 years ago, just kind of like on a whim. And then last year, it was like kind of planned, but then we kind of were in the park and we were like, oh, I guess this is a tradition now. And this year I'm like, we will be there on Christmas Eve. And it's like close to Andrew's family's house and we often like do something with them. So it's kind of like we go and do this thing and it's super special because as soon as we pull in the park, we like stop and we unbuckle Charlie from his car seat and he gets to ride on my lap in the front seat because everyone's driving 5 miles an hour through this like tiny little park. And so it feels like really special. We're all up front together. And yeah, so that's just like became a thing. And now it feels like it's just like codified into our holiday rituals. But I think I have felt over the past 4 years, a lot of pressure to be like, okay, what are our rituals? Where I'm like grasping for them and slowing down and being like, they will come to us. Let it be one thing that Andrew has been adamant about from the beginning is Christmas morning is sacred for us. And in the beginning, I just like didn't care that much. I mean, the holidays fuck me up so much. I'm just like, I don't even care. But it also felt kind of sad to me because it was just like three of us together and that felt so small. But each year it's come like little things have been building the last few years. We make Dutch pancakes together and then we like have the fire going and we just like all sit together in our pajamas and play with Charlie's new toys. And so it's become this really sweet thing. It felt awkward for me for a few years where I was like, why are we doing this? Like, why are we all alone? I just feel sad. But it was really important to Andrew, and I'm glad we like stuck with it. And we didn't really have anything. It's not like we were saying no to something else. So yeah, that's felt really special.
Yeah, it's like you were saying before, like growing pains, and when your family shifts or whatever, like traditions take a long time to evolve. And so if you're just like starting something new, everything's going to feel kind of strange at first. And there would be like a pang of like, but this isn't, there's no nostalgia around this, or there's no like roots to this. And it makes sense that there would be that like wobbly. But I also like the discovery, because it's interesting how much I feel this longing for like wonder and awe. And that's not always something you can really force. I'm sure there are ways you can create that feeling, but also isn't it great when it like comes upon you and then that becomes the thing? Like there's something especially wonderful about that. Our discovery, a couple years ago also, we leave Thanksgiving morning and we take a road trip down to, or up, I guess, to Illinois, which is where Micah's grandma lives. And he used to go there as a little kid. And so we've like recreated that road trip and we have Thanksgiving dinner in our hotel room and there is nothing open but gas stations. So we just have like a gas station microwave pot pies and pickles and yogurt cups and oranges for our Thanksgiving dinner in our hotel room. And that has become like a new, I mean, it's like so silly. There's no spectacle. There's no wonder and awe, but it's also like really sweet and it's what we do. And
well, it's about the context and the energy. Like that could feel like really depressing and sad, or it could feel like this super magical, like we go shopping for our Thanksgiving dinner at the gas station. When we were really little, my mom started having us make gingerbread houses out of graham crackers. And we always had so much tea. And so she would like empty tea boxes, which is like graham cracker sized. And so you adhere your graham cracker to the tea box so it's not falling over. And then she would just like put candy out and stuff. And we would build them. Our thing was that we like made them, but then we like waited until New Year's Eve to like take a piece of candy off or something, which is like gross and weird, but we don't do that. But this like, ritual of making gingerbread houses out of graham crackers is something that I have continued. Like, I've brought it to Andrew's family. I have done it with like friends when I was celebrating with them. I was looking back at pictures this morning to find examples of it, and there was just so many. And I love the way that I have like held to that ritual. One of the things going back to like wanting to give Charlie some of the stuff that I had as a kid is being able to go back and be like, this thing felt really good. And I have like happy memories around this. So I'm going to pull this out and bring it with me. Because in the past, it's kind of been like baby out with the bathwater. And there's just, for me and my family, holidays have historically been really awful. It's not been a good time. And so now we just don't all gather together, and which is, I think, better for everyone, perhaps. I don't know. But there is like the holidays really for me amplifies how like disparate my family feels, and just like hard memories and just sad. I mean, it's just like deeply, deeply sad and hard for me, both like remembering really hard things that happened at holidays, and then also just like that we don't have anything together.
There's a sadness with that too.
Yeah, it's just all of it. It's very easy for me to just be like, fuck the holidays. I hate this. I want to just skip past it. I don't want to do this. But being able to slow down and like pull out the pieces that felt good and build new rituals, and that has really come with Charlie. Yeah, he is leading the way for that within me, where I'm just like, okay, we're making this new world together. On his first Christmas, I was still like posting Operation Tiny Human. And so I wrote on this photo of him I took on Christmas morning, "May you grow up knowing only kind voices, warm hugs, and the cozy sort of chaos at the holidays. May your body remember this year as the one where you were the most loved and adored." And I like come back to this image and think a lot about what I want for him to hold in the holidays. And it is just like ease and joyful chaos. Like, there's always like a flurry and stuff feels chaotic, but to prioritize like that feels like joy, and to intentionally not put him in any spaces that his body would not feel safe and good, and holding that as a priority.
You have built like a really strong friendship community in St. Louis around you. And in some ways it feels like he is surrounded by, like the way that you describe that, is surrounded by those, like the voices that will make his body feel safe and loved. And I look at that with a lot of envy and curiosity.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
Our goal for 2025 is to reach $900 on Patreon each month. This would cover our overhead so that we're not paying out of pocket each month to produce these episodes.
And just so you know where your money is going, the episodes are perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds. She runs her studio with a rare humanity, and we feel so good partnering with her.
If you believe in these episodes, if you enjoy these conversations and want them to keep showing up in your feed, would you consider joining our Patreon?
You can join for $5 a month, which comes out to $1.25 per episode. Such a deal.
If you can't support financially, there are lots of ways that you can rally around this podcast: sharing a favorite episode with a friend or on social media, leaving a 5-star review. All of that really helps us keep this thing afloat.
Thanks. We love you so much. Back to the show.
Of how that is built, because in my world, I have so many beloved friends, and none of them know each other. And I don't know how to create the sense of community when all of my friends are like, I meet you for coffee, and then I'll meet you for sushi, and then, but you guys don't know each other. How did you build that?
Well, for one thing, St. Louis is like the smallest town. Once you know someone who knows someone, and everyone knows each other. That feels like outside of me. That's just, I live in this like magical little ecosystem that I did nothing to build. But also, 3 years ago, I'd gone through a really terrible friend breakup, And I was just feeling so deeply sad. And so for my birthday, I think it was like my 24th or 23rd birthday, I just invited everyone that I even kind of knew.
Wait, your 23rd birthday was 3 years ago? That's not right. What am I missing? Maybe there's another thing that happened there.
Maybe something else in there happened. I don't know. Some amount of years ago, remember how old I am. I'm about to be 36 in like 2 weeks, if anyone wants to like say happy birthday to me. I just invited everyone that I knew. And the group chat that I mentioned that I sent out today about winter solstice was created that night. And it has evolved and shifted a little bit. People have left the group chat and we have added some friends, but it's people like knowing each other. It's St. Louis being small. And it's me just like building the thing that I think that I am good at is when I am lonely or sad, I make the thing that I need.
Yes, you're very good at that.
And I needed people. And so I just invited everyone over to my house for a bonfire. And part of it was awkward and core people stayed and it has just like woven together.
I think I have this feeling, especially around holidays and friend groups, because like the idea of having like a big gathering, like Friendsgiving thing, and I don't know if we would do that, but like some kind of like winter solstice brunch or whatever it would be. I have like this, and maybe it would be mitigated by something like a winter solstice instead of like a Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. But like I have this fantasy of like having a bunch of people over for Christmas that, you know, like that we invite. And then this feeling that like, well, everybody already has like someplace to go, you know, like everybody's doing stuff with their families. And
I think too, the people that are in this group, everyone is queer. Most everyone, maybe like one person isn't. And I think there is something distinct about queer folks and their chosen family. And a lot of them have like good relationships with their family of origin. But I do think that is like culturally a thing within queer communities is that we really prioritize building chosen family together. And I'm not spending Christmas with them. Like last year I spent Thanksgiving Day with one person in the group who like had their like adjacent friends. So sometimes we do holiday stuff, but mostly we're doing things throughout the year. We all like go to each other's birthday parties. Like birthdays have been a big thing that everyone is attending together. The thing that I have gotten, which like lucked into, was marrying into a family whose holidays feel safe. In the first, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years of being married, it was really rough because seeing a family that I was just like jealous and mad and yeah, being in spaces where like everyone was getting together and I was like, fuck all of you guys. I'm so sad right now.
Why is this working so well?
And their traditions didn't feel like mine. You know, like it felt like sweet and safe and not traumatic. And also nothing they were doing felt like what I grew up with. And so it felt like weird. Like at Thanksgiving, they had like tablecloths and glass dishes and everyone like kind of dressed up. I spent it at my uncle's like land in the middle of nowhere, Illinois, and just like everyone was invited and it was just like this ragtag bunch and it was like solo cups and crock pots and like so many babies crying everywhere, which was not always the best time, but that's what felt more comfortable to me. So the like steadiness of his family's gatherings were like really hard for me in the beginning. Now it's like started, it pretty much just feels like home and really good. And especially since having Charlie, but that was super difficult for me to marry into a family whose like holidays were so like good.
What is this weird feeling?
It was miserable oftentimes, not because of them, but because of like where I was and not being able to like be part of it.
Well, and it just stands out to me again how a lot of things take time and that I'm like how much pressure we have on these specific days and then how much time it can take to feel comfortable and feel like you have roots within a specific holiday. Like all of that takes time. And if we can take pressure off of it, that can only be good, I think. You've also talked about like ways that you've tried to make space to hold on to some of the heavy feelings. Like it's not like you're just trying to erase them or like create something better so that there's, you don't ever have to feel the sadness again. How are you thinking about the lingering, if that's even how you would describe it, like the lingering sadness?
Yeah. I feel like the work I'm doing for it right now is releasing guilt about how sad I get through the holidays and just making more room for moody Christmas music and like slower times and just, I think, not putting the pressure on myself to just be cheerful all the time and not perform a like cheery holiday, because nothing is worse than pretending like you feel good when you feel like shit.
Especially cheery.
Yeah. Or like feeling pressure to make things like bigger and more than they are, like letting it be really, really simple. I just am like so moody. I make a lot of moody art around the holidays. I think it was last year I made this little moody reel of me and Charlie decorating the Christmas tree together. And I was just feeling so sad and also happy with him. I think the hardest part about it is that it is a really magical, joyful time. And also I am just so deeply sad in my bones. And it's so confusing, and it's, and I think I'm coming to find a place where this, just embracing the bittersweetness of it. But Charlie and I tend to decorate the tree by ourselves. Andrew's like not that into decorating the tree, and I usually want to do it before he does. And so we just do it together, and we drink hot chocolate and we dance, and I like take a time lapse of it, and that feels really sweet. But I think it's feeling sweet because I've let it be really sad. Like, I don't fight. I think we just prolong the sadness when we don't just sit in it. There's not like a magic thing. It's just like making a lot of moody work and drawing and writing about it, and not making things bigger and more joyful than I feel.
Yeah. For me, it has been helpful to even acknowledge or recognize that there is some pain. My family of origin is so big now. Are we close to 40 people, I think? It's really big. And my parents still host like Christmas Day, but they have to do it at their church because they're so big. And a couple of years ago, completely took me off guard. I had like one of the worst panic attacks of my entire life, like the half an hour before we were supposed to go to that event. And I think I was just so unprepared for, I didn't expect that. And so I think for me, there is something helpful about just acknowledging and being able to anticipate or expect that something might be hard. Just like knowing that that might be coming is helpful, so that it's not, I don't know, so I don't have to be taken off guard, or that I can, you know, like we can have a plan for how we're going to move through the stressful day ahead of time. We can have like little family strategies that we can have in mind before we go somewhere. So that's been helpful for me, I guess, kind of. It's still like fraught for me, and I still feel like, is there another way? I don't know.
I used to really want to run away and just be like, let's just go to a beach. Let's just do something else, which still kind of feels enticing to me. A couple years ago, Andrew's dad's side of the family, we all went to Kansas City and stayed in this big Airbnb together. And it was so magical. It was the sweetest thing. And because of people's schedules and a host of things, I don't know that it will ever happen like that again. But it was like, we were completely out of everyone's context. We were in a neutral space. And everything about it was so good. It was like the most magical holiday. There is something to me that I think if you have the resources or the ability to just like go do something completely different, like we've done it a few times, it's been good. And I think that that's something that we might return to in this season of life. I feel like really cozy things with Andrew's parents and sister and her husband and baby and Charlie feels super, that's what feels super important to me. And then building traditions with my little sister who lives across the street from me. And she and I are super intentionally being like, okay, let's plan some holiday things for our families that feel good. But it's taken a long time to get here. This is like a long time.
Yeah. I like the idea of like smaller pockets within a big family too, like that you still have that connection with your sister. That's a broader sense of family, but it's not, you know, the whole web, the whole tree. So it's like small and selective, and that feels good too.
There's a grief in being a big family because it is just, I don't know how many big families all are still able to.
I know a couple, and it's like, how are you actually doing that? Yeah. And it's hard for big to feel cozy. It's hard for big to feel intimate.
This makes me think about The Art of Gathering, which is the main takeaway I took from that book was if an event is for everyone, it becomes for no one. And that the kindest thing when event planning or creating like rituals and things is to be so specific about who it's for. I think sometimes it is a disservice to include everyone, and it might be better to be really specific about who certain times are for and like crafting careful rituals.
I don't know how the heads of that family make that call, because I can totally imagine if in some alternate world I had a million kids and grandkids, it'd be super hard to like let go of the sense of us all being together. Like, I know that's a longing for my mom in particular, but it is pretty chaotic. It's interesting to me that, because part of what we were saying earlier is like, there's only three of us. We're such a tiny little, like, is it real if it's not a whole family? And then it's like, but that's too big.
What's the happy medium?
Like, there's some very specific picture that we have in our head. And maybe it's just from seeing Home Alone in the 90s too many times or something of like, this is what a holiday is supposed to feel like. I don't know.
I also think sometimes we try to make a large thing feel more intimate than it can. Like, Kirsten and I are throwing this big Friendsgiving, and Andrew's inviting his friend. Kirsten and I are inviting her friends. I'm inviting my friends. It's going to be a lot of different people, but we're like staging bunches of different spaces. We're going to have like movies playing. It's going to be this potluck style. There's going to be a couple different fire pit options. And I'm not planning any time where everyone has to be exactly together. I don't know. There's a fluidity to it. And kind of the whole purpose of it is that Kirsten and her husband and Andrew and I are really trying to like build something together. And so we're inviting our friends together, which feels really different than us all like intimately sitting down at a table together and how you might curate that differently. But I think that's what happens sometimes with these bigger family moments is that we're trying to hold on to what could be sweet and small and intimate. And suddenly when you have 20 people trying to sit around a tree opening gifts, it's not fun. It's not good. That's not a good time.
Nor is 40. 40 is not fun either.
Yeah. It's like, how do we, what is the fun part? Like maybe everyone decorating cookies or us all. Something Andrew's family has been doing is going to the botanical gardens to see the lights. And like these events where we all show up together, but you can kind of fade away, but then be together when it feels good. I think we just have to be so much more intentional about how we're gathering, why we're gathering, and not just gathering by default. Because I think that's where like a lot of grief and pain can come in, is just not being, just not realistic about what it means when so many people get together.
My mom still buys individual Christmas presents for every one of her 26 grandkids and her 6 kids and their spouses. She starts shopping in January. I mean, she's just really, really wants it. And it makes sense. It makes sense that you still, like, she hates gift cards, so she can't just get gift cards for everybody. But it's just like, oh, honey, this is a lot of work for you. And it maybe you would enjoy it also better. Maybe everybody would enjoy it better if we could reimagine it a little bit. But what are your takeaways from this conversation? What's standing out to you?
I think if I was going to impart one thing to listeners or friends or someone who's like, how do we do this, is just like breaking it down and doing it intentionally and on purpose instead of by default, and really questioning like, why do we continue to do this tradition if it doesn't feel good? And what does feel good? You know, it's like gas station Thanksgiving is actually magical because of the intention and what it means and how you've pulled that together. I think it's hard to sit and there's a lot of grief in it, but I think sometimes you have to be the asshole in the family breaking tradition.
No, I'm always the asshole in the family breaking tradition. It's not a fun job.
It's not a fun job. My little sister has generously taken on that role. And I followed in her footsteps. But someone has to be the canary and say, this is not good. Or maybe it's not good for everyone. Maybe it's just not good for you. And there's so many times that you can be around people that you love and celebrate and build rituals. It does not all have to happen in November and December.
Yes, I like that a lot. I think taking off the pressure of any one day and thinking really openly and playfully about what your family's unique rituals could be.
And don't pretend you're okay when you're not okay. There's nothing worse.
Like, yeah, I think acknowledging and knowing to maybe anticipate if that's a pattern in your heart around certain times of the year, making space and knowing that that might be coming and not just being like so frustrated or surprised or mad at yourself that it's happening again. It's like, there's a reason for that. And, you know, you can pay attention to that. And maybe there's things that you can change. Maybe you don't have as much wiggle room to change at the moment, but I think not blaming ourselves or being mad at ourselves is always a good idea with those kinds of feelings coming up. And I do like the idea of discovery and knowing that sometimes some of those things take a lot of time. If some of these days or seasons are only coming up once a year, it makes sense that it would take time to discover what our unique rituals are, and that especially if we want to discover them organically, that just takes a lot of time, and that's okay. I really like the idea of taking off so much pressure of any one single day.
I definitely feel a zine coming on about this. I'm going to say this. There will be a zine for you to download with this episode. I'm just going to make it. It's happening. We need a little pocket guide to holiday survival, and I'm going to make it. We're going to make it.
Yeah, I wonder even like thinking about the pressure and like if I were to approach the big Christmas gathering, 40 people, and just in my head picture like this is just a Tuesday afternoon and I'm just gonna show up and discover, or I don't know, like just the pressure of it feels like part of the torture of like what this is supposed to be and what's supposed to happen here and what it's supposed to look like and feel like.
And not waiting. I think there's this something that I have noticed in multiple families that I have been around in the holidays where everyone's waiting on everyone to make the decision and everyone has to make the decision together. And I think go ahead and like establish your edges. Christmas morning, sacred. We're not giving that to anyone, which might be controversial in some families. And I think that it maybe was a little tricky at first. And then things can fall around it. But then you know that you're whatever the thing is that you need. Like, do you need to go take a solo long walk on Thanksgiving morning? Or like, you know, like what is the thing that you need to do? And if someone else plans something during that time, you can just graciously say, I will show up late or I won't be able to attend that. I think that we put a lot of pressure on everyone to be present for everything. And then we all have to shift stuff. And then everyone ends up feeling kind of frustrated. And instead of that, what is it that you want and need? Okay, like set that in stone and then the other stuff can happen around it.
You know what I really want to know from people who are listening is like what they've made it part of their holiday rituals or routines, like what things they discovered or built.
Oh my God, I would love to hear everyone's. I'm just so stuck on this gas station Thanksgiving. I am obsessed with it. I want to hear everyone's version of the gas station Thanksgiving or the like graham cracker gingerbread house that like started out of necessity for like little like toddlers. My mom started this when my older sisters were like little, I think. And I've now like brought it to Andrew's family and all these like adults who could make actual gingerbread houses. And it's so fun. It's so easy. You get a couple of like boxes of graham crackers and some candy and like throw it at the table with icing.
Way easier, just like low key.
It's so easy. It's so playful. And then you have energy for other stuff. But that's what I want to know.
You know what else? Okay, I'll just say one more thing that we did this year. Inspired by you, it was like right before Easter, I think, that you sent out this newsletter that was, I can't remember, just something that was inspiring, like new rituals. And Easter is kind of a fraught one in my history. And in going back to one of the things that you said about like creating things that are, I think you said this, things that are like so unfamiliar to the history of that holiday. It's like its own entirely new thing. Micah went out and bought like a ton of baby's breath on Easter morning, and we made spring creatures out of clay, and we used the baby's breath to be like little horns and like little decorative parts of the spring creatures that we made. And we made just like a whole line of weird, wonky, and partly inspired because Otto was in the deep throes of wanting to make things out of clay all the time. So we just like made all of these little springtime creatures that we still have some of them like hanging off of our trees and stuff. I mean, we have plants, and Otto made them into little like almost ornaments, and then we like hang them from our trees. Anyways, just like super random.
Random and also deeply informed by the season that you're in. Otto is into clay stuff, and so shaping that ritual around it, I think, is really important. And then it's cool to see, like, will you guys still be making those? You know, will your grandkids have this whole mythology around creating springtime creatures with baby's breath? Or maybe it was just like one season and that's all it was.
I don't know, but it was fun and it was playful and it was interesting. I don't know. It felt very different than typical waking up before dawn for Easter sunrise services on Easter morning kind of vibe. It was quite different. So anyways, well, we want to hear from everybody else. We want to hear how you're moving through this, what ideas you have or what new rituals you've made and all of it. So thanks for being here with us.
Bye. We love you.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
Bye.
Woohoo! This podcast is edited and perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.